Blog Talk Radio. Tonight to open up a discussion with what happened this weekend at the Dirt World Championship. So kudos to Lucas Oil. Kudos to everybody involved. Kudos to the sport. Because tonight, a NASCAR show starts off talking about the Dirt World Championship. How about you, friends? How the hell are you? Tad Taylor, Ms. Lee Reed. Y'all come on board. Tell me about what you just heard.
Well, if you ask me, dirt NASCAR-style points racing don't belong in dirt racing. But that's just me.
Yeah, and you are the traditional fan, correct? Am I correct? You are the traditional fan that likes it the old school way, right?
I prefer the old school way, but
you have to adapt. Does the old school way bring you fans or create an atmosphere where you're edge of the seat in the final moments of a race? Does the regular season, does the regular old stinking championship that we were used to 25 years ago, when Dale Earnhardt would go into the last three races of the season without anybody chasing him down for another championship, was racing really better then than it is now where we have a Final Four? Here we are tonight, just two weekends away from crowning a NASCAR Cup champion. We don't really have much more to talk about here at the end of the season, Taz Taylor. So thank goodness we do have the chance to talk about a Final Four championship. And give it to be the same, we have the same influence and the same ability to carry that over to dirt track racing, which is now on the verge of being the most popular sport that it's ever been. Chaz Taylor.
Now, I know you're going for the entertainment aspect of things, but sometimes in the traditional side of things, it could also bring in the entertainment value. Reason why I say that is because, Chris, you've probably experienced this a handful of times at least with your home track at Why Not. There's been times where at Fonda and Utica Rome Speedways, and unfortunately this year it didn't end the way I personally believe it should have, but there were several divisions that literally had probably like three or four drivers that were in the championship hunt, and by a separation of like maybe 10, 12 points, and that's a matter of 2-3 spots in dirt racing. And I believe traditional points format can also bring the same entertainment value.
It can, Taz Taylor. It definitely can, but does it? And does it not bring more attention to the sport when you have a guy who won 23 races throughout the year, and sure enough, he should have been the dirt track world champion. Instead, he finished third. And I know the traditionalists, they're upset about that. But I'm telling you right now, in a season where a guy won 23 races, why do we have any reason whatsoever to follow Formula One for the rest of the season? And I'm trying to tell you that the entertainment value is just as important as the sport itself. In this day and age, Taz Taylor, where you have dirt track racers who want to be considered professional racers, you have to understand that in order to be a professional racer, you have to have economic pull. And the only way to have economic pull is if you're sitting high in the charts of the entertainment value. The only reason why NFL is as big as what it is today is because I pay for cable. If I didn't pay for cable, if I didn't pay for the subscription every single year for my NFL network, for my ESPN, for my local channels, I would not have NFL would not have the ability to control the entertainment value prospect that they do. It takes the customer. It takes the value of the product to make value amongst the entertainment source. So, in other words, the drivers will only become famous if the entertainment value is there to sell. We are now in a day and age, Taz Taylor, Ms. Lee Reed, where we are selling racing on television, whether it be NASCAR on cable television or dirt track racing amongst streaming services. If you are a dirt track fan, I guarantee you by now you have at least one subscription to a streaming service for dirt track racing, and that is a game changer. Ms. Lee Reed.
All right, so I want to counter you, Chris. Say in the dirt track world, they adapt to this playoff format. Say more dirt series or dirt tracks adapt to this. Orange County Fair Speedway up here in New York has tried this twice that I can remember in recent times in the last few years.
It's been within a few years. Yes, sir. It's
now,
been within the last few years.
The first year they attempted this, I feel like there was kind of a small little fluke in their rule book that somebody found a loophole to, and a number of fans complained about it. And rightfully so, because their rule book for their playoff format to crown a track champion on one of their divisions, which was the Big Block Modified, was that if you won a race in any of their, like, 8 regular season big block races they had, you're locked into their track championship playoffs or whatever. It didn't matter how many races you participated in those 8. Stuart Friesen, I think, raced 3 or 4 races during that regular season. He won one, and he got into playoffs. And it knocked out some of the guys that were there for 6, 7, even all 8 races that put in their effort. And Stuart Friesen got all the way to the final 4. He bought into the system. When there's many complaints about the number of races you attend, Orange County Fair Speedway changed the rule saying that loophole is out. So if you win a race in the regular season, you have to attend, I think, like at least 75% of the regular season races in order to lock yourself in.
Yeah.
Should it be a 75% or should it be 100%?
No, I mean, I think that it's probably just as much. In this day and age where you have the traveling racer, you really want to get these guys locked in. I understand that, but it's counterintuitive if you have drivers who, you know, like the Cajun series, the Big Block Modifieds, these guys travel off to other places. And once again, you're really just giving a championship to the guy who showed up to the most races. And that's exactly the reason why it's not an entertainment value, because you're really just giving the guy who shows up for every race the championship. And, you know, we've seen some good championships. I'm not saying that every dirt race doesn't end, and trust me, I am fighting against the wolves on this one. I don't feel like there's probably a single person this side of the Mason-Dixon line that's going to agree with me, and that's okay. I'm not here to be agreed with. I am telling you what the hell sells, and if dirt track wants to be an economic value for a consumer to purchase, then it needs to be as exciting as possible, and adding this element to the championship was definitely an entertainment value. There was not a fan that wasn't on the edge of the seat for that last race of the season. Everybody tries to say NASCAR is dying, but I send the picture every time that when I'm sitting in the stands at Talladega of nothing but full seats on both sides of me. NASCAR is not dying. The places where they have a hard time selling have decreased in economic value, Taz Taylor. They're no longer worth what it was before. What makes it worth it is when these guys are out racing their damn tails off and anybody and everybody has a chance to win. That is why Talladega and Daytona are as successful as they are, because they create entertainment. What the world did it say 10 seconds for? Are we going, hold up. Oh, man. Are you serious? So I don't know how the hell I messed up. But anyway, we're not going to be on air anymore. But we will have the podcast recorded. So if you're listening live and jumped off, you'll just have to catch the recording later. Look, wow, what an idiot I am. I don't know how. I swear I said it for 180 minutes. That's so screwed up. Oh, Lord have mercy. Regroup, Chris. Miss Lee, are you there? Miss Lee?
I'm here. I don't have a whole lot to add, though, because you got to remember, I came to racing later in life. I don't have the background with a local track or dirt racing like you guys do. So I don't feel like my opinion really matters that much.
I beg to differ, Miss Lee. I think your opinion matters just as much as, if not more. Your opinion has more value because you are late to the game. You don't have tradition that weighs on your side. But let's break it down to the entertainment value. What is more entertaining, Miss Lee, knowing that the last race of the season has four competitive drivers coming down for a win, and you win the championship, versus a traditional championship that could be sewed up 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks before the end of the year, based off a man just coming out and raw dogging the entire field? That is what we've seen this year in dirt track racing. That is what we are seeing this year in Formula One. We have not been able to discuss Formula One at all this year because one man has won the race, every single race, except for maybe two races this season.
Right.
There is hardly any entertainment value in the same guy winning 21 out of 23 races. But,
well,
on the other hand,
you know,
where you had the Dirt Track World Championship, you had a guy who had 23 wins versus the guy who's got 8 wins, 7 wins, and maybe 5 wins. And believe it or not, the guy with 7 wins comes home with the championship trophy. The guy with 23, well, he broke midway through the race on a very rough racetrack.
Well, you know, I think that one factor that you have to take into consideration is, are you talking a local dirt track? Or are you talking a larger series like the World of Outlaws?
Lucas Oil.
You know.
Yeah, Lucas Oil, World of Outlaws, Cars Tour.
Right. But what World of Outlaws needs to do is going to be different from what your local track needs to do.
I agree with that, Miss Lee. I keep coming. You're getting somewhere with this. I agree.
Does World of Outlaws need to mimic NASCAR? I'm not so sure because I just don't. They need to be their own unique series. They need to keep their uniqueness. Everybody doesn't need to be like NASCAR. Everybody doesn't need to be like IndyCar or Formula One. It's the uniqueness of the different series that is part of the attraction.
I agree. And take it for what you just said. World of Outlaws races a traditional point style system. Lucas Oil has tried the NASCAR system. Whose championship race got talked about here tonight and whose championship race did not get talked about? That is
right.
That is the value of it. That's the value of having this style racing because it makes everybody stop and talk about it. And I feel like in this day and age, what did Earnhardt say? Whether they're booing me or cheering me, they're still talking about me, right? And that's value.
Right.
Seth.
I got the idea, Chris. You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
All right. So, say World of Outlaws, they keep their traditional point system. That's
mm-hmm.
fine and dandy. That's their prerogative. Lucas Oil Late Model Series, if they want to do the NASCAR playoff format, basically winning you're in, winning you move on, final four, first one of the four to cross the line is your champion. Have at it. Why can't we see a sprint car series? And Chris, you should know ideally where I'm going with this one. Why can't a sprint car series, especially high limit all star circuit of champion series, try this one out? Why don't we do a, say, 20-race regular season and have, like, a six, and then do the old chase format. Reset the point, however many wins. You get 3, 4, 5 bonus points, however many you want to give out for each race win a driver has done. And let them settle out those six races in traditional point style. At the end of those six races, there's your champion.
Yep.
I like that. I like that, as long as it's keeping people engaged. You know, I mean, look, it's hard to say. I would not want to take cup racing back to the old days, to the old age. I definitely am very satisfied with the chase format that we have today. Could it be tinkered with? Could it be made a little bit better? Could we have a 3-race showdown instead of a 1-race showdown? I'm game. Like, I always want to see the field change. I always want to see, you know, if we start hitting 440 feet dingers, then I want to make sure that right field is at least 420. You know what I mean? Like, I want to make sure that we are to the game, and that way it keeps the fans engaged. It keeps people on the edge of their seat. And maybe this traditional, well, the championship that we have now in NASCAR, maybe it's run its course. I believe this is the longest that we've actually run one certain format, I think, in the entirety of this of the Chase system. It has been tinkered and it has been changed throughout the years, just as every other sport has evolved. NASCAR has too. And I don't want to leave the dirt track world out of that evolution. I want them to evolve. I want the fans to get excited. I do feel like it's heartbreak for Ricky Thornton Jr. to have missed out on the chance to be a champion. In any other year up until this point, he would have been the champion. And it is heartbreaking that he has to go home knowing that he was just, you know, it just wasn't in the cards for him to win it this year. Will he be able to regroup and come back at it next year and have the same potential, the same ability, and the same chance to get to the same place that he got this year? You're damn right he will. And that's the same thing with Denny Hamlin. You know, Denny Hamlin's not won a championship in his entire career. And I could probably show you 9 or 8 different formats that he's had to race to try to get it. None of them have fit the cards to play just right into Denny Hamlin picking up a championship. You know, first topic of the night. Do I feel like Denny Hamlin's championships are over with? He's got to go out here to Martinsville and take no prisoners. That's the only way he gets in. Is Denny capable of doing such a thing? I do believe, guys, that Denny could win Martinsville. If he gets in at Martinsville, I feel like he's probably the best threat for the championship. But those cards have yet to be played. That's what makes this interesting. That's what made the Dirt Track World Championship interesting. It gives people like you and me storylines to talk about. Now, if I'm just a fan sitting here watching the cars tour, I could give one rat's ass about the track champion. I could give one rat's ass most of the time about a true championship. Most of the time, I just want to watch a good damn stock car race. And, you know, in the end, if it's entertaining, then I'm satisfied with it. Am I turned off or on by the championship or format? I'm probably turned on more by the excitement than I am the lack thereof. But either way, if you can keep it exciting, I'm down for that. So that's where we are. Page 2. Anybody else have anything to close on what we were talking about? Let's get over here to the Denny Hamlin and the Ryan Blaney situation. And what's going on with the next 2 weeks. I'm going to try to get out of here early tonight.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the end of the year, right? I mean, it's the end of the school year. You know, you remember going the last 2 days of school, and there's nothing to do. It's really, that's where we are right now. You know, we're just showing up trying to get that track championship. You know, we're trying to get our perfect attendance record. In reality, there is a couple of guys that are trying to still race their way in. If we can kind of review what happened this past weekend at Homestead, I think Homestead kind of opened up a lot of eyes. I sealed the deal. I tried to tell you guys that Christopher Bell was going to take over what he had at Las Vegas, and he was going to apply it right to Homestead, and he did exactly that. People probably wrote Christopher Bell off at the beginning of the year or some way through the midway of the year, but look, just similar to William Byron, Bell has issues throughout the midseason. I don't know what it is. Bell starts off strong, and then come the midseason, it is what it is, and then all of a sudden here at the end, he's on fire. A couple of top two finishes. Bell is, he's heading in the right direction at the right time. Let's talk about what we've seen this past weekend. Miss Lee, you haven't had much airtime today. I understand that you're probably in a moving situation. Now, were you able to catch the race?
I did. I totally missed the truck race. I caught the end of the Xfinity race, and I was able to watch the last half of the Cup race. It was interesting. That was for sure. The Blaney Larson incident was crazy. I think Larson just totally miscalculated. I don't think either of them did anything wrong.
We've seen Larson do this before, right? He drives by the seat of his pants. Sometimes this happens.
Right. Absolutely. Other than Bell winning the race, that was the only other thing that really stood out to me.
Right. I felt like it was a good pace race. It really did look like Kyle Larson was probably going to be the favorite and go back to back, but that wasn't in the cards. And I think that it's crazy after all these years of crappy races at mile and a half speedways. Now all of a sudden we have a car that is just like magic at these mile and a half speedways. The racing was throughout the field. The one thing that I believe I discussed in the room is that I can no longer handle the broadcast. I had to turn it over to MRN. It's just, they're going to have to make changes in that broadcast booth. It is unbearable to listen to. When you start out the race talking about chase implications and stuff like that, and you're five laps into it, and Jeff Burton sounds like it's the last damn lap already, I couldn't do it. I had to turn it off. I had to go to some true broadcasters that loved calling the races and loved talking about the side-by-side and the three-wide racing. And I'm sorry, guys. I found that on MRN. Thank goodness streaming slows down a little bit, and so it was able to connect almost immediately with MRN. I had to back off of the play button a couple of times on my phone to get it perfectly matched and synced together. But once I did, man, I enjoyed the rest of the evening, and MRN called a hell of a broadcast. That's why I felt like the race was so awesome. I mean, I had an awesome broadcast to listen to.
Mr. Lee used to get mad at me when I would turn the volume down and turn on MRN. But I totally agree with you on that one, Chris. MRN is definitely the best when it comes to calling the races.
Yeah, MRN, I'm not going to lie, MRN and PRN were my saviors when the races would be postponed to like a Monday or a Tuesday. I mean, I'd be at work, but at least I'd be able to listen to them, and they are colorful. I mean, I know on a radio broadcast you have to be colorful because you're not seeing the picture, you're not seeing the race, but they make you feel like you're literally watching it, even though you're listening to it. Like, you're literally envisioning this in your head, and like you are watching it in front of you. The race part was the racing product itself at Homestead did not fail. I believe Homestead, you know, delivered a fantastic race start to finish. As you mentioned, Chris, it looked like Kyle Larson was the dominant driver up until late in stage two. When a couple of drivers started coming in late, like William Byron, Ryan Blaney, Christopher Bell, obviously, I honestly think that we could have seen a 4-5 car duel if the cards played out that way when it was all said and done. Or we could have seen Larson versus Bell from Las Vegas to this race and see if Bell could actually capitalize on Larson or if Larson would shut down Bell again.
Yeah, I agree, Tess. You know, it was going to be a battle there. I seen William Byron, he was battling. I think this was kind of the race where you were either in or you were out. Ryan Blaney, my God. Where did that rocket ship come from?
I was gonna say, who would have funked that?
Right?
Who would have funked about that?
This guy's gonna go race for a championship.
And he was what, 17 points under the cutoff line before Homestead? And now he's like +10, and he's like 10 points above now.
Yep.
Well, Penske knew where to put their power.
That's right. They did. You can't count a Penske guy out, man. I'm telling you. The moment you do that, you've showed your hand already. Look, Penske's not going to give up. They have the resources to get their car. Ford's got to be represented in this championship race. If not, you know, it used to be the Ford 400 right at Homestead. Ford was the championship sponsor. So, you know, they definitely.
Ford EcoBoost. Ford EcoBoost 400 is what it used to be.
Yeah. Ford EcoBoost 400. That's right. So, any big, you know, surprises? Any big surprises from this past race? Comers or goers? Does it look good for Harvick? Maybe Harvick wins Phoenix. I don't know.
I do want to give some credit here to Brad Keselowski. I know the race ending did not go the way he was running in the first two race or the first two stages of the race. It seemed like Brad took the playoff pressure off of him and he like went full sail. And it's surprising to me to say that because he's got Chris Buescher, and I'm not saying this in the sense like of he's not caring about the fact that Bush is in the playoffs or he's, you know, not giving Buescher the best stuff possible. I think that maybe this round kind of shows some of the weaknesses on Buescher's side of the RFK program. And maybe Brad just kind of said, look, the pressure's off. We have nothing to lose. All we're going to really gain now is points to try to finish fifth place, the best we can do. We're not here to win a championship. Now we're just in it for the points at this point. And he pretty much ran his own race. He didn't care if he was running against playoff drivers. He was looking like the Brad Keselowski we all know.
Right. If you look at the old style points, he's somewhere like sixth in points. So, You know, definitely a rebounding year for RFK. Though Ryan Blaney gets all the attention from the Ford camp for the championship push, it's been RFK holding the Ford banner all year long. And kudos, you know. We picked up somewhere around mid-season that RFK was moving in the correct direction. And then from that point on, it was just ahead of steam. Of course, we went straight through the summertime with Chris Buescher winning several races. Brad Keselowski just, you know, missing a couple of times. Like, he's got one coming. And it's not going to take long, much longer to get there. It could come in this week. It could come next week at Phoenix. It was interesting to see that by this point of the season, outside of Keselowski, there wasn't very much of the other cars running with the championship contenders. It is an anomaly every year to see, you know, the separation of the field, basically, between the ins and the outs. It's kind of like everybody just doesn't want to race the drivers who are racing for a championship. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like you're taking the product off the table. But I understand the manufacturing implications that could happen if such and such races his way up to the front and that car misses by a point. It's because you interfered with that. But is that not manipulating the race? Is that not manipulating the chase? You know, those are, you know, that's the area of racing that I feel like there is no other way around that, right? I mean, there's, if you're not racing competition, then you are basically throwing a race. You're not giving your best effort. I don't like that. That was unheard of 15, 20 years ago, you know. I'm just not a big fan of that. Any thoughts?
Well, unless you're following team rules, there's no reason for you not to give your all. You know, regardless. You know, okay, if you're a lap car, yes, you're going to give some consideration to, you know, chase drivers coming up on you. But if you're not, it, you know, and like I said, aside from team orders, why would you sit back?
That's true, because after the Las Vegas race in which Kyle Larson won, there was in one of the post-race interviews that Larson and Cliff Daniels took part in, they both said that just because they're locked in and they're getting ready for Phoenix doesn't mean they were going to treat Homestead and Martinsville like it's a walk in the park because they're locked in. They're going full steam, and their idea was going to Homestead. And I'm sure their idea is still the same way of going into Martinsville this weekend, of going in full steam, build as much momentum as possible, because it's huge when you go into Phoenix in the Championship Four.
Right.
But this does make me wonder, however, when it comes to Martinsville, how much are team orders going to be playing in the factor? Because we have to look at it from the driver's standpoint, and we also have to look at it from the owner's standpoint, too. Because there's one wild card factor in the owner's playoffs versus the driver's playoffs. And I know it's crazy to say that, but it's what we are dealing with in this current format. You have Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson, who are both locked into the Championship Four on both the driver and owner side of the playoffs. On the on the driver's side, you have Byron and Blaney staying above the cutoff line. Byron looking like if he gets enough stage points in the first two stages at Martinsville, he could lock himself in based off of points and pull the Denny Hamlin move. So is Hendrick going to try to push that factor, or are they not really? In terms of Ryan Blaney, I mean, you have Logano and Cindric, but they're just chasing points for their own manner. So is Penske going to throw the best stuff for Ryan Blaney in hopes that maybe Logano and Cindric will help them, or is he going to expect those two to not be much of help? Is he going to go to some Ford alliance and create something there? Which creates another problem because you have RFK with Chris Buescher on the other side of that factor. I want to go back to the Chevy cam quick because Chase Elliott is on the owner side of the playoffs. And Martin Truex Jr.'s 19 team is not on the owner side. So is Hendrick going to push the 19 through to try to make that work? And then, of course, you have the Toyotas. You have Reddick, Truex, and Hamlin. And we all know Truex and Hamlin are big time, or, well, I don't necessarily want to say big time, even though one really is a big time favorite, but they are looked at as favorites, and it's hard to say that for Truex, especially when he's been lucky throughout this entire playoff.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot that we'll still, you know, have to learn between now and Phoenix. It's going to be interesting to see if, you know, maybe Chase Elliott runs very well at a place like Phoenix. Also, you know, Hendrick is so dominant at a place like Martinsville. Kyle Larson's already won. William Byron is probably going to be able to race his way in on points. Is there anybody already locked in on points, Taz? Have we taken a look at that?
No. Right now, Bell and Larson are the only two locked in, so at least two spots available. Right now, above that cutoff is William Byron sitting plus 30, so no, that is not guaranteed in. Ryan Blaney is plus 10, so obviously he's not a guaranteed in on points right now either. That's why I said William Byron, if he gains enough stage points at Martinsville, I think he'll be okay based on points. Obviously, Byron's not going to have that mentality, let's put it that way. Trying to see if maybe Bob Pockris has some sort of point calculation maybe to help with that. Normally Bob Pockris is kind of like right on it.
Right.
Let me tell you, Bob Pockris, one heck of a reporter. Fox Sports picked up a big guy, or big time, very passionate reporter.
Oh, yeah, he was on Door Bumper Clear last week. Probably one of my more favorite Door Bumper Clears for the season. As you can see, race fans, I mean, we're at the end of the year, right? There's really not much storyline. There's going to be a couple of guys that are going to get in on point. Possibly one guy that's going to get in on a win. If Kyle Larson happens to win Martinsville, you've got two other guys that are going to race their way in on points. Christopher Bell is a lock. Kyle Larson is a lock. So
right.
Two open.
I got it. So Bob Parker says that feeling good drivers are obviously Christopher Bell and Kyle Larson because they're in on wins. Feeling good right now is William Byron, who sits plus 30 above the cutoff line.
Byron needs 36 points to clinch a spot into the next round, no matter what anyone else does. In 11 starts at Martinsville, he's earned at least 36 points four times, including three of his last five races there. He has one victory, which was April 2022, and six top tens in Martinsville. So Byron should be very little concerned about this. If he is, it's probably because of his 23rd place finish at Martinsville and earned just one stage point at Martinsville back in the spring. Feeling hopeful is Ryan Blaney, he's saying. Blaney ran well at Martinsville a year ago when trying to advance, as he finished third and earned 43 points but didn't make the cut. If he does that again, he will make it as long as no other driver beneath him wins the race. He has scored at least 42 points in seven of his last nine starts at Martinsville. If he has a day like he had in the spring where he finished 12th with 30 points, he could be in jeopardy of having to wait another year to make his first championship four. And everybody else, he has the feeling nervous, resigned, or desperate. And the only desperate driver he's got is Chris Flickard.
Wow. Well, I can't argue that.
I'm telling you, we're in for it, man. Martinsville's going to get crazy, yo. Martin Truex Jr., watch out, Denny Hamlin. No, that guy, he's not going to give an inch. No, it's bearing down. I think it's, who's left? Okay, Christopher Bell, Kyle Larson.
So essentially, so let's break it down for William Byron quick, because obviously he's obviously got the best vision going into Martinsville right now of Championship Four. Packer says no matter what anybody else does, he needs 36 points. So let's say he wins the first two stages of Martinsville. That's 20 points right there. So he would have to finish no worse than 21st to make that happen.
Wow. No worse than 21st. That's the goal.
But if he does not score any stage points, he needs to finish he needs to either finish first or second.
I could see some Hail Marys, for sure. Like Tyler Reddick, perfect example of a Hail Mary team. Who's the other? It's Chris Buescher. That's the other guy, right?
You got Reddick, Truex, Hamlin, and Buescher. Reddick's 10 points under. Truex and Hamlin are 17 under. Chris Buescher's minus 43, who is basically in a must-win situation.
So the no chance in hell has to go to Chris Buescher?
Basically, I mean, you're 43 points behind. It's a full race, but not. It's like a full race behind, but you're not really a full race behind because, I mean, if you don't score any stage points, let's say Chris Buescher doesn't.
An example on any no chance in hell. Who is the one driver you would make that gamble with?
No chance in hell is Chris Buescher. I'm sorry. He has to win. Even him trying to gain stage points ain't going to help any.
So he's got a Hail Mary.
Hey, he has
and
to.
Last year we had a Mel Helen. What was it called?
A Hail Melon that was banned?
Yes.
Yeah. What do we going to have this year with Buescher? Huh? A push and Buescher?
And who do you think is going to be racing balls to the walls because of that? It's Chris Buescher. And who have we seen pull crap like that out?
Chris Buescher.
Chris Buescher.
Yep.
So you definitely cannot rule him out.
So you go down and you go put $20 on a Blaine. You go put $20 on a Byron. Okay? Neither one of those guys have wins coming up into March. But you go down and you throw $10 just for the hell of it on Buescher. Because your big payout at the end of the night, if Buescher wins, man, that's a hell of a payout. I'm not going to say Buescher's my favorite. I have seen miracles happen this year from that RFK race team. Could it be over with already? It could be, most definitely. We'll have to race the race to find out. But if there was a no chance in hell with a Cinderella story that could somehow or another wind up in a championship situation, it could be Chris Buescher. Christopher Buescher. Two Christophers racing for a championship. That's pretty cool. All right. Well, Taz, I really don't see the need into getting all deep into the favorites and underdogs and whatnot. Those that are a few that are left, this is the last race to race their way in. I can throw a Hail Mary if I want to. I could go for a Chris Buescher or something like that. It wouldn't hurt me at all. I do have one quick question about the pool. Will any of my points transfer, or are we all even going into the last race of the season?
Just like NASCAR, our final four for the championship four will be the same. So everybody will be in the same playing field. Here's the only exception. Here's the only difference. The four people in the final four all have to pick a different driver. It does not matter who it is, but each four of you have to pick a different driver.
Oh, wow. And how is that going to be?
Jason and I have talked a couple weeks ago. We're going to try to break down how that's going to work out this week.
It's got to be based on the time the email comes in.
And I'll make sure Jason helps me out too with this, but we're going to make sure like we are on top of the emails in terms of at least for the final four.
A damn gimmick. That's what it's going to come down to, a damn gimmick.
You want an entertainment? You've got it. And now you're in the middle of it.
Hey, check it out. So next Tuesday will be our last Tuesday night show. We will come on the air for the hour following the cup race next Sunday from Phoenix. We will end our season with that show and say our goodbyes and congratulate whatever champion we have to congratulate. It's been a hell of a season, guys. I know just like y'all, I'm wore out. It's been a long season. When we start these podcasts at the beginning of the year, you ask, oh, my God, how are we ever going to make it through 40-something shows? And here we are. I think the network in itself has done 70 shows this year, 70 shows. Not bad for a network. Just thank you for all your hard work and dedication through the ups and the downs. We appreciate it. So let's cover some favorites, Taz Taylor. I'm at a loss of words. I mean, yeah, let's close
this
thing out,
pick.
Baby. Let's get it done. Let's do the hot
picks,
right, baby. Let's go with the favorites, man. We're not going to worry about any others. We're going to do the favorites. It should be a top six, maybe top eight. Of course, all those were probably going to be championship drivers. Taz Taylor, tell me who you're favoring this weekend, your favorite.
All right. So, as usual, I left some drivers out for good measure.
So with that being said, my favorite, two of them I've mentioned earlier, which was Denny Hamlin and Martin Truex Jr. And I know Martin Truex Jr. is a stretch, but we know how he is at short tracks. And then my other favorite is without an argument, as I have mentioned from Bob Pockris' article, is William Byron. As for contenders, I have listed a couple non-playoff drivers that could play spoiler. That being Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. And I have thrown in Christopher Bell as a contender because I had – because honestly, if I didn't have – honestly, I had Christopher Bell circled for Martinsville as somebody to watch for. And then underdogs, I've thrown in Chase Briscoe, which is a name we don't mention very often, A.J. Allmendinger, and Eric Almirola. And I will mention this before the panel, before you guys, the panel throws out driver names. There are only two drivers, active Cup drivers. I've only mentioned one that have an average finish of 10th or better.
Really?
Yes, and I've, like I said, I've only mentioned one name out of that hat.
Who's the other guy?
Ryan Blaney.
Look at her. Ain't that something?
Despite having no wins, he has 7 top fives and 9 top tens and 15 Martinsville starts. He has led 377 laps. He has an average start of a 9.3 and an average finish of a 9.5.
Holy smokes. Man, I mean, I tell you what. So, Ryan Blaney could be a favorite for this weekend's race. I can see it, you know. I mean, like I said, Penske has $125 million worth of resources. And I believe they're going to pump every dollar they can into this race car. You know, he's the guy that his championship season should have been over with. Because of a violation, because of a part that was deemed illegal, that was overturned. To have Ryan Blaney, I just don't know if how legitimate Ryan Blaney as a champion would actually be, Tad Taylor. Ryan Blaney is not. Not your typical superstar. So he would be the least likely champion since Matt Kenseth, I feel like. The guy who, you know, put together just the good enough year to take on that championship. You know, I may say something different than that. But the way that it looks here by stat-wise, you know, there's no argument. Ryan Blaney should be a favorite.
Jose, I don't want to leave him off the list. The furthest he should go down is contender, and I'm probably stretching that one. I don't know where Miss Lee sits on that one.
Well, you know Penske's going to throw everything behind him, so I can get on with putting him as a favorite.
All right. Ryan Blaney is a favorite. Let's go.
Yeah.
Other names I'm going to throw out there I did not mention. Joey Logano, Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman. And I know Bowman's not a playoff driver. Logano's not a playoff driver either. But those are names to consider.
Yeah, I could see Logano as a contender. While Penske's gonna throw everything behind Blaney, this is still in Joey's wheelhouse. So I could put him as a contender.
Yep. All right, that's a fair argument.
Yep, I agree.
Any other feelers we got out there? I know, like I said, I threw a few names. We got Logano out of the hat. We got Blaney out of the hat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chris Buescher's got to be considered the best underdog of this whole Chase system. And I'm sure Martinsville is not necessarily in Roush's wheelhouse. Never has really been. As a matter of fact, if I can remember correctly, Matt Kenseth said, you know, he raced at Roush, so he was never, you know, in likelihood considered a good Martinsville driver until he came over to Joe Gibbs Racing. That could all change because this isn't your typical Roush Fenway Racing. This is Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing, and Keselowski has, you know, some pretty good times there at Martinsville. So I will have to put Buescher in as definitely an underdog, considering I am considering him an underdog for the championship through and through. If anybody, if you were just going to bet on the guy that had no chance in hell, you got to bet on.
Agreeable.
Ross Chastain is not on this list, man. The Hell Melon. How do we?
Yeah, that was the name of it. I was going to bring his name up next.
That's a contender I can work with. Although I feel like if we're going to mention his name, I got to throw in Alex Bowman on that same icon too. I feel like Alex Bowman would be a better argument for a contender than Chastain.
See, the way Ross has been racing lately, I would put him on the underdog list. But then again, with this track, I could see him as a contender.
Yeah. Well,
are we throwing Ross? So we're throwing Ross Chastain as a contender?
I think you have to.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Do we have any other... any other, like, maybe possible favorites to put in the hat? That we could throw just one name into that?
Yeah, Byron's name's not in there, is it?
No, his is in there.
You know, I don't see Larson's name in there, and that's... you know, that's sad. We know how much Martinsville favors Hendrick and the best driver in the Hendrick stable at this moment in time is Kyle Larson.
And especially we know that Kyle Larson and Cliff Daniels will go into this race full head of steam to try to build any momentum towards Phoenix.
Oh, for sure.
What about Brad?
Brad is listed as a contender.
Okay.
Our favorites and contenders list is full. I want to throw Ty Gibbs as an underdog. Ty Gibbs had a strong showing at Homestead. Or was I not watching the same race?
No, I mean, Ty Gibbs. He's going to be a competitive driver next year. He's definitely got more talent than Bubba Wallace. I'm not on the Ty Gibbs train yet, but I think when you look at statistically what he's had a better season as a rookie than I think a lot of the other drivers have. So look at Chase Briscoe for crying out loud.
You know, as much crap as we give Ty Gibbs, I have to say, watching this kid come up through ARCA and all the way into the Cup, and we know, you know, that he was moved up way too fast, but the kid has grown and matured, and he's proving himself to be a good racer. Hi, kitty.
And I think that book is yet to be written. Could he be a Daniel Suarez caliber driver? I believe his what is it called? When you compare to career paths, he's probably going to have a career similar to Jamie McMurray or Austin Dillon. Can he be a little bit better than Austin Dillon? Absolutely. Will he be the type of caliber driver that wins championships? Probably not, you know, but will he accumulate 10 wins in his career? I believe so. Look, we'll have to see, you know. Ty Gibbs is definitely on the radar. The question is, you know, it took William Byron 4 years to break out, 5 years to break out. What expectations are we giving Ty Gibbs, right? You know, William Byron was in the best of equipment, and it still took him time to break out.
We got to also look at Kyle Larson. It took him being a regular season championship contender with Martin Truex Jr. and Chip Ganassi equipment, nonetheless, to break out. I mean, people are going to argue 2021 was basically his breakout year, but I honestly feel like Kyle Larson back in, what was it, 2017, when he battled with Truex that year?
Right.
I feel like he was in Ganassi equipment. I feel like that was really where he started to break out and become Kyle Larson.
Right.
I think we tend to look at the Silver Spoon boys like the Dillon boys, like Ty Gibbs, with a little different lens than we do somebody like Kyle Larson, who didn't come from a legacy family. So, you know, you've got to temper that. And that's how I look at Ty Gibbs.
Right.
He's a legacy kid, but he's learning. I see him learning. I don't see that so much with the Dillon boys.
Right.
I see them more as expecting Papa to take care of them, whereas Grandpa ain't playing that game with Ty. Yes, he's helping him, but I think that's two totally different situations.
As Tony Stewart has said before, and this was around the time when he signed Josh Berry to race for SHR in the Cup Series next year, it's one thing to have money come through the series. It's another to have the talent, regardless of how much money you got and what name you grew up with.
Yeah, Tony's still a firm believer as well that the driver should be good enough to attract a sponsor, and I think that that's, you know, the new school approach that other companies are going to have. You know, that's why we've seen Kyle Busch leave Gibbs Racing. That's why we've seen the turnover at Penske. Those
but the funny part is
the old school model.
The funny thing I find it with Gibbs in RCR in terms of sponsorship with Kyle Busch is that, yes, there are certain sponsors that are with the team, but it's another to bring sponsors in. And I feel like when Mars M&M's left Joe Gibbs, I feel like Gibbs didn't really have any sponsors to fall back on for Kyle Busch. When Kyle
right.
Busch went over to RCR, yeah, he had the default sponsors. He had the Bet MGM. He had Cheddar's. He had Elsco. I'm sure I'm missing one or two big ones that were set in stone, but when Kyle Busch came in, he brought in Lenovo. He brought in Lucas Oil Racing Products. He brought in, I'm sure he's brought in like one or two other big name sponsors.
Right. Yeah. I read it, you know, Richard Childress was, I think, third on the list with sponsorships per capita brought into the race team. But back to the list, and we'll get ourselves out of here. I do believe we are at a standstill now with the show. So we've got any more to add to this list? Are we good to go? What do you think?
We are good to go. We are good to go.
We are good to go. All right. Well, it's been a lot of fun being on the show with you guys tonight. Hopefully y'all will tune in for our final two shows coming up. Of course, Tuesday night we'll be back here to discuss what happened in Martinsville for a quick show, and then we will be on for an hour there at the conclusion of Phoenix. So, Taz Taylor, if you'll close us out, man, we want to thank you guys for listening to the show.
All right, we want to thank everyone for listening along to Race Chat Live here tonight on Blog Talk Radio. If you ever miss us live on Blog Talk Radio, you can always catch us on any form of podcast, such as iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, you name it, we pretty much got it. If you want to see the full list of our podcasts, head on over to the where you can find us on podcast platforms. Head on over to the 110 Nation Sports. I believe it's the 110 Nation Sports Network.com. I may be wrong on that one. Hopefully I'm not. Just head on over there. You'll find a full list. You'll also see more content such as blogs, links to our YouTube channel as well. Go on over to our YouTube channel, subscribe to that as well. You'll see clips of our shows, different kinds of content. Hopefully during the off season, we'll provide some content so that way there we're not kind of being dry and quiet. Mr. CJ and Mario are back in the studio tomorrow for the 110 Nation Sports radio show, talking about the NFL this week and other kinds of fun stories, including the MLB postseason starting to heat up, but also wind down as the World Series is going to be starting soon. Of course, Thursday is Jared's Safety to Success show on Thursday. And, of course, Mondays is our 110 Nation Race Chat Live exclusives, where we throw back to our interview type shows for about half an hour to an hour length of shows. And those are on Monday night. We want to thank everyone for listening on the Race Chat Live. This has been the Caution Flag of Racing Radio, Chris Creighton, the Mama Bear, the 110 Nation, Miss Lee Reed. I'm the Tasmanian Devil Flaggers, Tess Taylor. Saying goodnight. We'll see y'all next Tuesday for our final Tuesday night show.
Bye. Good night.
Night, everybody.
That's crazy.
Employees, unless that they had to pay for health care.
Right.
I'm playing up until I'm home. I'm going to be up for a little while. Jim, you all see my new talent? Thank you.
I'm 20 years from retirement.
Mama, can I make you some coffee? No.
Walmart.
Yeah.
What's up? Who's that guy?
Mom. I found
I literally almost said wasn't Donald Parker.
I found so many things today that is not my fault. Okay. Crazy, right?
Who has an American flag walk?
American flag walk?
Yeah, like a blue.